Welcome to the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with your host, accountant and author Carol Topp, the homeschool CPA. Join Carol as she shares her knowledge on a topic of interest to everyone, money. On the show, Carol will discuss starting and running a microbusiness, teaching your kids about money, and managing money in a homeschool organization. Carol takes confusing topics such as money and business and puts them into clear English. She's ready to share her knowledge with you on today's show.
Hi, everybody. This is Carol Topp, your host of the Dollars and Cents Show, and today's podcast is the first of two parts. It is a presentation I did at some homeschool conferences last year, and this one is going to be called We're Not Raising Children, We're Raising Grown-Ups. It's a presentation I really enjoy giving, and I hope to do more in the future. It's kind of my looking back on raising my kids and lessons I've learned in my attempt to make sure that I am preparing them for adulthood and not being guilty of being a helicopter parent or keeping them children too long. That's not appropriate. This presentation was recorded at the Midwest Homeschool Convention in Cincinnati in 2014, and it will be the topic of this podcast and the next podcast, so two parts. We'll split it in half. Hey, speaking of homeschool conventions, it's homeschool convention season starting, and I'm going to be at a number of homeschool conventions. Actually, when this podcast airs, I will be in Cincinnati. That's my hometown, at the Midwest Homeschool Convention, and I hope to see some of you there. Then I'll be heading off in April 23rd through 25th, to Tulsa, Oklahoma, to be speaking on a number of topics, including homeschool co-ops and microbusiness for teens to homeschoolers there. In May, I will be at the CHAP conference, that's in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and at the INCH conference in Lansing, Michigan. So again, talking to lots of homeschoolers on a myriad of topics, and I'm looking forward to both those conventions. Hey, and speaking of conventions, I will be taking my new book, which is Career Exploration, a book I wrote for homeschool high school students to help them in the daunting task of picking a career and a college major. So I will be bringing that book with me to all the conferences and conventions I'll be speaking at this year. So look for me. I'm usually registered as Carol Topp, homeschool CPA, sometimes microbusiness for teens, and you can take a look. We can talk about career exploration. So I look forward to a great convention season and meeting many of you soon. But right now, let's get started with this podcast. We're not raising children, we're raising grown-ups. So thank you for setting aside time of your day. I hope this is interesting. I hope this is motivational. I hope this just gets your brain juices stirring. I homeschooled for 14 years. My daughters are both in college, and my credentials for giving a workshop is like this, is that I have raised two grown-ups. Yay! The one with the short hair there, she's my older one, Emily. She homeschooled all the way through high school. She will graduate next weekend, a week from today, from The Ohio State University with her master's degree in accounting. She has a job lined up for August in Columbus, Ohio. Woohoo! Very, very proud, you know? It's a crowning accomplishment when you see a kid do this kind of stuff. Emily's had some challenges. She had to sit out a semester of school because of illness. So we don't take it for granted when our kids make those accomplishments, right? It's a huge victory. The younger one there is Sarah. She is a junior, again, homeschooled all the way through high school, a junior at Taylor University in Indiana, studying film production and minoring in photography. Talk about fun majors, you know? So I got the accountant on one side and the film production one on the other. It's been a lot of fun raising them. I homeschooled, did I tell you that, 14 years. And while I was homeschooling, I'm also an accountant. So I started a website called Homeschool CPA, where I help homeschool co-ops get tax-exempt status, help them with record-keeping, accounting, that kind of stuff. I did a workshop on that yesterday. But it was at a homeschool convention, much like this one, that a mother came up to me because she saw my banner that said Homeschool CPA, and she wanted to talk to me. Okay. I thought she wanted to talk to me about, you know, hiring me for my CPA services. No. She had a son who was working for a big four accounting firm. He had just started working for one of these firms, and she was bothered by something. So she came to talk to me about it, and this is what bothered her. He was working a lot of hours at this big four accounting firm, like 80 hours a week. It was tax season. It was March. And this is what she said to me. He can't go to Wednesday evening church services. What can I do about this? You're asking me what you can do for your 23-year-old son who's working at a big four accounting firm during tax season and can't go to Wednesday night church services. Now, what do you think I told her? Given the talk title of this talk is, we're not raising children, we're raising grown-ups. What do you think I told this mother she could do to help her 23-year-old son who was working for an accounting firm and working too many hours, according to her? Figure it out yourself. Let him figure it out. But out, Mom. Here's what I said. I patted her arm while I said it to kind of temper it. But I said, stop being a homeschool mom. She needed to stop 5 years ago, don't you think? He was obviously bright enough that he got hired by a big four accounting firm. Not everybody gets that, right? He's fine. He's single. He's young. He's healthy. He's fine. That's what I told her. Basically, stop being a homeschool mom. But that made me start thinking, my gosh, where are we coming from that this mom even seeks me out to ask as a CPA, what can I do for my son, the CPA? Where's that coming from? Why is she even presuming that she is supposed to do something about her adult son's work life? I don't get that. So I started thinking about that. What's going on here? And then a CPA colleague of mine was doing a telephone interview, and he shared this story that, you know, when they do the interview, you make it through the resume cycle, you get a telephone interview. He's interviewing this young man, again, now a college graduate looking for employment, right, full-time employment. And during the interview, he says this. Oh, yeah, by the way, my mom's on the phone with me. Wow, that's what he said. Wow. And how long do you think that interview lasted? Not much longer after that point. Now, what would possess a mother to get on the interview with her adult son, the job interview? And what son wants his mom on the job interview? It really happens. And that puzzled me too. So I got thinking about these things. I got thinking about, are we keeping our children too long? That's the kind of stuff I've been thinking about. And I want you to start thinking about as we're seeing these things. Then I ran across a YouTube video. I wish I could find it again, but it was a young adult man, again in his 20s, and he's giving a testimony of why he's not dating in his 20s. And I don't really necessarily have a problem with him choosing not to date for whatever reason, but here was the reason he gave. He doesn't want the heartache of a breakup. And I thought about that, and I thought, well, first of all, every date, it doesn't lead to a breakup, or sometimes breakups aren't even heartache if you initiate them, you know. Why are you holding yourself back from what is a normal, pretty normal, typical activity for someone in their mid-20s? Now, 13-year-olds, yeah, sometimes they're too immature, right, to be in a relationship. But a mid-20-year-old who's saying, I just want to avoid pain, therefore I'm not going to go out there and meet and date. Like, what? I don't get that either. That seems like a little bit of adolescence strung out a bit too long. He's trying to protect himself maybe a bit too much from opportunity. If you don't meet people in what we call date, you know, go out and spend time with them, how are you going to find out, you know, who your intended is? Even our hero, Josh Harris, Josh Harris, who wrote I Kissed Dating Goodbye. I read that book. My daughters read that book. I liked I Kissed Dating Goodbye. Even he says he's seeing stuff in the church now that's just a little bit skewed. That couples or singles are so busy guarding their hearts, they're not even talking to each other. It's like, where's that coming from? We've gone a little too far in kind of what, protecting our kids or our kids protecting themselves and then cutting themselves off from what are normal opportunities for relationship. So anyway, these are the kind of things I've been stewing over and thinking about for about 2 years as my own kids are becoming emancipated. So here's my question to you. You've heard of helicopter parenting? Are we guilty of helicopter parenting? Are we guilty of hovering over our kids a bit too long? Yeah. Are we worse than our public and private school neighbors and friends? Do we have helicopter parenting disease worse than they do? Some of us do. What do you think? Let's just even put aside the homeschooling, but why in general are our peers, the people who are now raising teenagers and young adults, doing this helicoptering? Where's that coming from? Our parents didn't get on telephone interviews with us. Our parents, you know, didn't raise us this way. Why are we raising, in general, kids this way? What do you think? I'm anxious to hear. What do you think, Chrissy? Fear. Fear of what? Fear of harm coming to them. Yeah, I agree. Big one. Yeah, what do you think? Because she said because the world is different from the world we were raised in, it's scarier out there. And so therefore, our reactions are perhaps more protectionism of our kids, even our young adult children. Yeah. Any other ideas? Why homeschoolers? I agree. I think our identity gets wrapped up in being a homeschooler. I loved homeschooling, all right? It's very satisfying. To me, it was. Some of you don't feel that. It's frustrating to you all, but it can be, and your identity can be wrapped up in that. Matter of fact, Heidi St. John used to call herself the busy homeschool mom. What word did she drop from her? She dropped homeschool because she doesn't want her identity to be just as a homeschool mom. But I tell you, as someone who retired from homeschooling, I struggled that first year. When my co-op took me off the email list, it hurt. Because I had to go find new friends. I'm serious, I did. I had to go find new friends. Ma'am, did you have a comment on what you're thinking so far? Let's see if I can summarize what you said. You mentioned a couple great words, that the teenagers have an entitlement mentality, and we end up kind of fostering that and raising, codependent? Yeah. Yeah, I think there's some truth to that, too. And you're looking at it from the teenager's perspective as though they're kind of saying, Mom, do this for me. And we give in for whatever reason. You know, some of it's peer pressure. That's the word I thought you said at first, Chrissy, peer pressure. Other parents are doing it. Isn't that what makes a good parent who gets on the phone during the job interview? Who, you know, oh. Okay. So here's some of my thoughts. Joanne Calderwood, who's at Booth 1020, right? Booth 1020 downstairs wrote a wonderful article in this issue of Homeschool Enrichment magazine. And she also wrote a book called The Self-Propelled Advantage. Her website is You Are the Mom. She wrote this article called Six Signs You May Be Micromanaging Your Teenager. So she calls it micromanaging. This is on your handout, but you know, you could call it helicopter parenting, whatever you want. And I just want to share a couple of the things that she talked about in that article, just to see if you can identify with what she's talking about, micromanaging your teenager. And if you want to know more about Joanne's book, The Self-Propelled Advantage, you can go visit Booth 1020, You Are the Mom. Her book is kind of about getting your kids academically independent. Okay, kind of self-learners, if you will, which is a good goal in the high school years to aim for. But anyway, Joanne says, here's a sign that you're micromanaging your teen. You help your teen without being asked. You help when they didn't ask. So here's an example. My daughter, Emily, the one who's graduating with a master's in accounting, was quite busy this winter. She was taking a full load of master's degree classes, and she has to eat gluten-free for health reasons. And I thought, why don't I just make a whole bunch of freezer meals and drive them up there to Columbus, an hour and a half from here? Why don't I just do that? Good moms take care of their kids, right? She didn't ask me to do that. And it was probably only because I was preparing for this talk. I tell you, if you ever want to like hold yourself accountable, prepare to do a talk, and then you behave yourself a lot more. So, but I thought to myself, you know what? She didn't ask, and she's managing just fine. She asked for and received a crock pot for Christmas. She's cooking meals. She's freezing them herself. And you know what? She's going to be a tax accountant. She needs to learn what it's like to cope with a busy season in her life. Why am I going to bail her out? Next year's just going to be harder if I bail her out now. So I had to stop myself. She had not asked. I don't need to go offering her help if she didn't ask. And she's 23, and I'm still reminding myself of this. Don't help your teenager without without them asking, without being asked. You can certainly say, hey, would you like me to? But try to avoid that when they're teenagers. Try to assume that they're strong and they can do it themselves. Joanne also says in the self-propelled advantage, a sign you're micromanaging your teens is you run your teen's daily schedule of activities. Are you in the habit of saying to your 18-year-old, oh, today you're doing this, and then don't forget this at this time, and then you're going there? It should be the opposite. They should say, Mom, can I have the car because I have this going on or that going on? On Monday, I have a doctor's appointment, dot, dot, dot. Oh, that's the transition of them managing their own life and their own schedule. They should start managing their schedule of daily activities. They should also be managing their course load. If they know they have to get the chapter of science done by the end of the week, how many pages do they need to read a day? They should be filling out their syllabus. That's, she said, about what age do you transition? And, of course, it's unique to your kid, all right? So some junior high is sometimes a good time to experiment with that, with how much they can handle and how much they can't. But in general, I kind of want you to start believing that they're more capable than you think they are. And then they're going to disappoint you, so don't pull in the reins too hard. Just say, you know, let's try again. You messed up. You messed up that appointment. What are we going to do next time to make sure you don't forget that you had soccer practice an hour earlier today? Let's make sure you remember that to drive downtown in Cincinnati at 8 o'clock takes more than 30 minutes, right? Okay. You step in before your teen makes a mistake. That's the fear. I don't want them to make a mistake. I don't want them to fail. Therefore, I will stop them from failing or making a mistake. So my younger daughter and I are driving on the interstate, and she's 20 years old, and she's exiting the interstate a little too fast for my comfort. So what did I do? I corrected her mistake before she made it. Sarah, slow down. And when she got done with the turn, she looked at me with this kind of glaring look. Mom, I know how to drive, is all she said. It's like she was trying to tell me, I didn't really make a mistake. I was going a little faster than you wanted me to, Mom, but basically back off. You know, she didn't know how to drive. She's never had a ticket. She's never had a speeding ticket, never had an accident. Why am I trying to rescue her from making a mistake? Because I have to be loosening those reins and letting her take over more of her responsibility. Does that make sense? So anyway, those are just some of the things to start thinking about. Am I micromanaging my teen, and how can I start letting them manage more of their lives so that they can be the grown-up I want them to become? This is another book that I read that has really got me thinking about some stuff. This is a book by I believe she is a Yale professor, Yale or Harvard, I forget, Amy Chua, C-H-U-A, I believe it's on your handout. But she wrote a book called The Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. Anybody familiar with this book? Very controversial, though. She raises her children in a very strict way. She calls herself a tiger mom. But the one nugget that I liked out of her book was when she compared basically Western parenting to her background, she's Chinese American, as you see, to Eastern parenting. And that and she calls those tiger moms. Basically, they're kind of more the Eastern parenting style. That Western parents are extremely anxious about their children's self-esteem. I'd say that's probably a good observation of Western parenting, yes. But tiger moms assume strength, not fragility. Very different way of looking at it. And I've been thinking about that for a couple years since I read her book, too. Boy, if we assume our children are strong, then it kind of changes the way we parent them versus assuming their poor, precious self-esteem is going to be damaged, therefore I'm going to protect them from everything. Get it? I'm not saying she's 100% right. I'm not saying Western parenting is 100% wrong. It's just something I've been thinking about in how I'm raising these kids to be grown-ups.
Does your high school student struggle with choosing a career or college major? Are you fearing they might waste time and precious money switching majors in college? I'm Carol Topp, and my new book, Career Exploration for Homeschool High School Students, will help your teenager investigate their personality, their interests, their values, and then match them to possible careers. But career exploration doesn't stop there. The book walks students through researching careers and then mapping a plan to be prepared in high school for going on to college or whatever's next. My book, Career Exploration, works for individuals, but it's really great in a group or for use in a homeschool co-op. You can find Career Exploration on Amazon.com or on my websites, homeschoolcpa.com and microbusinessforteens.com. Help your student make one of the most important decisions in their lives, picking a career. Take a look at Career Exploration by Carol Topp today.
Maybe we should be like Christopher Robin, who said to Pooh, "Promise me you'll always remember, Pooh, you're braver than you believe, you're stronger than you seem, and you're smarter than you think." So that might be what you tell your child someday when you're trying to transition them into taking over their own activities. "I think you're stronger. I think you're smarter than you think." Maybe we need to tell ourselves, maybe that kid is braver than I believe and smarter than he seems most of the time. It's kind of believing the best about your kids and then trying to transfer that to them so they believe themselves to be stronger. And that stretches them and helps them grow up to be the grown-ups we want them to be. What do you think? I was kind of pleased to find that quote. You can even get it painted on a plaque. You know, it's interesting. So as I was thinking, I wanted to give a talk like this about parenting and raising grown-ups. I found this wonderful book called "Parenting for the Launch: Raising Teens to Succeed in the Real World" by Dennis Trenton, and his co-author is a woman named Erilyn Lawrence, who homeschooled. And I was so glad to find this book because that means I didn't have to write it. Because I didn't want to write this book. But his premise is we want to give our teenagers wings and not strings. Kind of has a nice little ring to it. That we end up tying our kids down when we overly enable or control them. We tie them down when we overly enable or control them. Interesting thought, huh? They become inhibited rather than equipped. Oh, I like that way he was thinking there. It was kind of interesting. So here's what he says. He's talking about control. When we fail to relinquish control, that our children become weak in areas where they should become strong. See, what happens is we exercise our muscles in those situations and not theirs. So let's go back to Emily and the meals and the crock pots and stuff. If I'm bailing her out by making her food, she's not learning to manage her time as a young adult on the job or in school and cooking meals and planning ahead for the fact that busy season's coming, right? If I exercise my muscles, she's not exercising hers in all these very important areas of life. I'm like, wow, I like the way he says it. And I like the idea of the muscle illustration. I have a few copies of this book, Parenting for the Launch, 4 of them, I believe, down at my booth, which is booth 1711, Microbusiness for Teens. And or if you just want to, there's some bookmarks up here if you want to at least remember the title of the book. Grab a bookmark, okay? Here's what Mr. Trenton says we should try to do. In order to give them those wings and not strings and not overly enable them, if they sleep in, don't yell and nag. Wow. If they sleep in other words, they need to suffer the consequences of whatever might happen if they sleep in, right? And with homeschoolers, it's a little bit easier because they could just perhaps delay their day. If they're late for whatever they need to be late for, they need to maybe suffer those consequences, right? That's going to help them be the grown-up we want them to become. If they spend all their money, don't bail them out. When I was raising my daughters, I started giving them, I still do for the one who's still not financially emancipated. One is financially emancipated, one is not. I started giving them clothing budgets, and I started when they were about 14. So these are graduate 13 or 14. And I said, here's your clothing budget for the year. I will buy coats and necessary shoes. I have two daughters. That word necessary was really important. Necessary shoes, okay? And I'd say, here's your clothing budget for the year. Keep track of what you're spending. Then after about 2 years, but I would pay for it when we went shopping. Then after about age 16, they had their own checking accounts. I would put money in at the beginning of the year for their clothing budget for the year, and they had to manage it. And if they spent it all in January, that was their problem. So it was about, I think it was about November or December 1 year when my oldest daughter was 17 and we're at Old Navy and she's got two sweaters in her hands and she's trying to decide what to buy. I said, Emily, they're both nice and you could use some sweaters. Get them both. And she said, no, Mom, my clothing budget's almost used up. This one I can buy on the budget, meaning you already gave me the money for it. If I buy the second one, it's my money that she earned, but you know, all the things, microbusinesses that she had. And she stood there. I remember her staring at those two sweaters for a long time in Old Navy, and she put one back. Now, it would have been perfectly okay with me if she'd bought both too, but what I liked was that she was weighing the decision at age 17, knowing that money was limited or knowing what it felt like to have to buy some of her clothing with her own money. That's what you want. And that was I'm kind of proud of the way I did that, to be perfectly honest. You know, you kind of transition. When you're 13, 14, 15, you have a budget, but I keep the money, and then later I give you the money, you manage it. I know one girl who gets an allowance of $150 a month, but she has to pay for everything, gas, entertainment, clothing, everything. I think that's a very smart dad. Yes, ma'am. Comment. Oh, you want a figure? Yeah, sure. What the heck? I think I started out at $400 a year. Like I said, I bought coats and necessary shoes. Those were the big items. And now my daughter's in college, and they were given clothing budgets of $500 a year. Yeah, she told the story. I'll repeat it briefly for the recording, but her fourth and second graders are given some money that they have earned, not through allowance, not through just giving, but they've earned on commission. And when they go to the store, you don't bail them out if they fail to bring enough or fail to calculate sales tax. Yeah, they got to learn. Ouch, it hurts when they wanted something and they weren't prepared. Better to learn it with a small item than to learn it with a $20,000 car or, you know, when they're in debt up to their eyeballs. How about this one? If they have a conflict, don't jump in and try to fix it. Why not? Conflicts happen. They got to learn how. Now, there are times when you do step in, when things are inappropriate. You know that, right? You know the lines when there's bullying, when there's physical abuse, when there's mental, emotional abuse. There are proper channels to go through, but you should go through it with your child, not in replacement for your child. Does that make sense? If the coach is doing something inappropriate, and I don't mean just your opinion of what that call was, like this father. I mean when they, you know, something you know is inappropriate going on, then you take it to the levels it needs to go to. But try to stay out of their conflicts when you can so that they learn. It's okay if you come home and talk about it, but then you say, son, I think you should go talk to your coach about this. Son, I think you should talk to your, you know, leader about that, so they learn how to manage those conflicts. Basically, Dennis Trenton's advice in Parenting for the Launch is we are trying to incrementally release control, increasingly hand over the reins, which is tricky. I understand that. And that's why it's a good idea to have conversation with other parents. What did you do? How are you doing it? You know, find some parents who you admire and say, you know, what kind of releasing of the reins did you do with your kids? Here's some ideas, again, from Mr. Trenton's book, just to get you thinking, okay? And some of you might do some of these, and some of you might incrementally release more control as they get through their teenage years, is what I'm talking about. Earn their own money and manage their own money. We touched on that a little bit. I have a website called Micro Business for Teens. It's all about how they can earn their own money. And I've got some resources down at my booth, 1711, I think, yes, if you're interested in having them earn their own money. Do their own laundry. I read this book, I believe it's on your handout, called Children Who Do Too Little, about kids doing chores. I think my kids started doing laundry when I know they were younger than 8 and 10. I asked them that recently because my younger one was kind of small, and she had to stand like on a step stool because we had one of those top loaders, you know, and she could put her laundry in, but she couldn't get it out, so bigger sister had to get it out. That's how young they were when they started doing their own laundry. It takes a little while to train them, but not long. You know, what I didn't want was what happened to me. When I was in college, I lived in the dorm the whole time. And I remember my senior year in the dorm, this freshman boy had come to college and obviously had never done laundry in his life before because he's asking me how to do his laundry. And I decided to have a little fun with him, you know, play with his mind a little bit. And I said, now, when you get done, you know, make sure that you check the washing machine because they eat socks. And he just got, I was fooling with him, you know. He gets this look on his face like, what do you do? I said, it just means you look in the washer and underneath the rim because socks stick there. And this kid had gone off to college without ever having done his own laundry. You don't want that, you know. Teach them how to do their own laundry. Teach them how to fix some meals, especially their favorite meal, from beginning to end, meaning they have to go to the grocery store.
They have to shop. They have to know the right quantities. They have to prepare it. They have to get everything hot on the table at the same time. It takes practice. Have them try to do that when they're still, and you sit in the living room, so you're there if they have a question, but you're not there in the kitchen. Now, with your junior high kids, yeah, maybe be there in the kitchen. But with your high school kids, maybe you transition out of the kitchen and you're in the next room and they can ask you for help if they want it. How about cleaning the house before and after their friends visit? If their friends come over and their friends make a mess, who's supposed to clean it up? They are. It's their friends. Encourage your teenagers to start making their own appointments. They can certainly call the dentist with, you know, checking with you, can I have the car? Such as I have, or the orthodontist, or something like that. You know, any of your kids in braces, you see that orthodontist, what, like it seems like once a week. It's about once a month, right? When they're there, let them make the next appointment. Get out their planner. Do they have a planner? It's all on their phone now. Get out their phone and put it on their calendar. You're starting to teach them these grown-up skills, not you making their haircut and dentist appointments. Let them make it. How about asking, this is the one I honestly am weakest on, do or pay for their own car maintenance. So my daughter, the one away at college, she's funny. She did notice, to her credit, that the car that we gave her to use in college was rapidly decreasing in the mileage it was getting. I was proud of her for noticing that, you know, because she used to be able to go a whole week before it filled up, and she could only go like 4 days. And she calls her, she says, something's wrong with the mileage, Dad. And then it's making this funny sound. And while she was driving, she turned on her phone and recorded the sound and then sent it to my husband. And he's like, what is this I'm listening to? What? This is not helpful, Emily, you know. And we ended up saying, take it to a garage. Get it looked at. So she had to ask her friends who's a good mechanic, call a few. These are important things for somebody to learn how to do. Car maintenance. It was a brake job it needed. That's why the mileage was down. Okay, any questions or comments at this point? Because I'm going to talk about some different areas of growth next that, you know, just food for thought, areas you might look at that you want to start encouraging your students to grow in. But let's take a minute for any questions or comments you might have, because I've been doing all the talking. Yes, ma'am. Okay. This is an interesting dilemma. She's got one child who's a saver and one who's the spender, and the spender spends his money, and mom and dad are saying, we're not going to bail you out. But the brother, the sibling, is kind-hearted and the saver and is willing to bail out the brother. Wow. I'd say, what we want is we want that spender to feel the pain of his consequences. So will brother bailing him out mean the pain of irresponsible actions has gone away? Or will brother bail him out with a loan with interest rates that are equally painful? Right? Like 18%, like a credit card. I'm serious. That's real life, right? There's not always going to be somebody to bail you out, or they bail you out, but it hurts because it's 18%. That's what I think. Okay, I'll tell you a story. I had a gentleman call me. He was a pastor, and he called me for some advice because his 30-year-old son was getting married, and the bride-to-be had called off the wedding, or at least put it on hold, because she had found out that this 30-year-old had a tremendous amount of consumer debt. I can't remember the number. I think it was like $10,000 or $20,000. It bothered her a lot to go into marriage with a guy who was carrying that much credit card debt. And so the father of the groom was the one who called me and said, I'm going to bail out my 30-year-old son so he can get married. And someone had said, why don't you at least call and get some advice from other people? And I was one of the people he called. What do you think I told Dad, father of the 30-year-old, about bailing out his son so his son could get married? I said, don't do it. Listen, if the bride is the one saying, I'm not sure about this, then you don't go bailing him out so they can get married. Her radar's up, right? It turns out they never did get married, and it was only indicative of many other problems in this son's life. So, yeah, and he was a pastor. He was a good, kind-hearted man. He just wanted to help his son. I don't think that would help. That's what you call enabling, right, that word you used earlier. So, okay, any other comments? Yes, sir, ma'am, sorry, in the back. I've gotten that. Her question was, were my daughters allowed to keep the remaining money and from that clothing budget I gave them? It was not an issue for us. But yeah, you raised the issue of, well, what if they don't buy new clothes? I had this one mother who, it was the idea was her son was supposed to buy his own toiletries and things like that. She walked, he would never shower, use deodorant then, you know? Yeah, you kind of have to say, this is the minimum you must buy, clean underwear, socks, and jeans because yours are too short. Some, you know, you can give that child, and here's where you make it unique for that child. You're parenting those two kids very differently, the saver and the spender, aren't you? You have to because they're different, right? So you might say, now for you, I'm going to set some minimum clothing requirements. Now, you can go to whatever store you want. You can be very, you know, Plato's Closet, the reused stores, that kind of thing. You can go there and find it, but you got to at least have 3 new pairs of jeans and 5 new t-shirts this summer or whatever. Okay. So for that kid, you put a few parameters on. Other kids don't need those kind of parameters. Yeah. I'd say you tweak it for the personality of the kid. And you know, you do have permission to add on requirements later as you find out this is not working. We got to change things a little bit because, you know, please go buy deodorant, son. Right. I gave you money. Go buy it.
Thank you for joining the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with Carol Topp here at the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. For more helpful information, visit Carol at her website, homeschoolcpa.com.